Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Right, Southern Cross is back, and with us in studio is Pacific Media Watch contributing editor Michael Andrew. How are you?
Hello there, I'm good, thank you.
Good. Missed you the last couple of weeks. You've been away?
Yes, I've been on holiday and various assignments and whatnot.
Fair enough. So let's start off, get right into it, with Papua New Guinea. 23 people, including two pregnant women, were killed in an intertribal attack in Papua New Guinea's Hala province. Would you be able to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So it was very horrific and very sad. So it was two separate attacks, and the first was 18 women in a village called Karira, which is in the same province, and then a separate attack where about 8 people were killed. And it is quite shocking in that it is women and children involved. There's a lot of intertribal warfare in the highlands regions of Papua New Guinea, as we've talked about before, but this is the first time that it's actually involved non-combatants, I suppose. So it has greatly unsettled the administration and the local community, and there has been a very strong response to it. The Prime Minister, who's from that region and who has, that's his electorate, he's basically said that he's going to hunt the perpetrators down, and he's deployed more soldiers to help with the keep the peace while the investigation ensues. So yeah, it is particularly disturbing, because two of those women were pregnant, as you said before, and it's indicative of the growing tribal warfare that's happening in that region, which a lot of commentators are saying, because of the changes with land ownership and a lot of companies coming in there, it's opening up, and this just creates, without proper mediation, it creates conflicts between the tribes because they don't know how to deal with that idea of ownership. That's what's been speculated as one of the factors involved in why such an atrocity occurred.
And so there must be concern that this sort of thing will happen again, is that right?
Yeah, because they only have about 40 police and even less soldiers spread out across that entire region, which is thousands of square kilometres. It's huge. It's like the size of the North Island, perhaps. To keep the peace, and they're outgunned and outmanned because there's a proliferation of firearms throughout that region, so the warlords and the soldiers and the fighting men are armed, so they are quite formidable. So there is a lot of fear that this will keep going. So that's why they've deployed more manpower and more soldiers to try and keep the peace and deter any future attacks. But I think in this particular case, we've got a story from one of our collaborators a prominent PNG journalist, Scott Wade, who did a piece on this, and he got some eyewitness accounts from the local chief and the local priest who saw the immediate aftermath of the attack. And basically, from what he deduced from interviewing people, it was an act of revenge from a past incident that had occurred, where the woman in the village were harboring one of the men who had attacked the other village that were the perpetrators, that kind of thing. So it's all eye for an eye stuff, which is what these kind of tribes have been doing for centuries. You know, it's all about retaliation and whatnot. But in this particular instance, it is very horrific and very malicious.
And yeah, I suppose concerning that the government can't do a lot to control it at the moment, or because of the lack of sort of manpower they've got out there to over all of that space.
I think it's just a case of having, I mean, the long-term thing would be just the mentality change, and that's this kind of deep-seated psychological thing.
But yeah,
I think for the time being, just having soldiers out there to try and deter any kind of attacks moving forward. But yeah, very, very sad.
Very, very sad.
Mm.
So let's move over to the Philippines. There have been some journalism and human rights developments there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So this is, and again, is an ongoing issue. Journalists have been attacked and persecuted in the Philippines for many decades now. And I think there's about 13 journalists that have been killed under the Duterte administration, the current president. And there was a recent one that happened last Wednesday where a journalist in the Mindanao province was killed. So it just casts a more alarming light on this particular issue, and a lot of not-for-profits like Amnesty International are calling for the UN to investigate this and Duterte's war on drugs. And the two seem to be linked, because the journalists want to investigate the war on drugs because that's what their job is, to investigate the pressing issues in that society, but they're getting attacked for investigating the war on drugs, and the war on drugs keeps on going and drug dealers keep getting extrajudicially murdered. So there are calls for the UN to investigate this from Amnesty International, and a prominent human rights lawyer has agreed to, this is a little bit disjointed, sorry, a prominent human rights lawyer has agreed to represent Maria Ressa, who's the award-winning Philippines journalist and editor of The Rappler, who, which is a fantastic publication that has done a lot to cover these types of human rights violations and abuses and what Duterte is doing.
Is Duterte kind of just quite brazen in this? Is he just, you know, everyone kind of knows that he's killing these journalists and he doesn't really care, or is he trying to cover it up?
He's incredibly brazen and arrogant and impudent, like more so than any other leader, I think. He tells, he makes public speeches saying, we are going
this
to
is what
kill
we're doing.
You all for what you're doing. And he makes terrible, terrible misogynistic comments that are all on, like, online. You can watch them. It's the most awful kind of stuff that this guy says. So he's very impudent and callous, and he has very, from what I can tell, no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Maria Ressa has said that he's targeting her directly for what the work she's done. He doesn't like journalists, obviously. He doesn't like drug dealers. No. He doesn't like anyone that goes against him and his values or lack thereof. So, yeah, that's why they're asking for the UN to step in and investigate him and his indiscretions.
Yeah, so I suppose that's sort of the only hope the journalists have, because if their leader's not going to, you know, help them, then got to turn to bigger forces, I suppose, more international forces.
Yeah, because a lot of them are being deterred from doing their jobs. Mm. They've said, in one story we published, the National Union of Journalists said no story is worth dying over.
Mm.
And that's, yeah, I mean, that's kind of fair enough, right? I mean, you put your life on the line to cover a story, but, I mean, you gotta
weigh up the sort of, you know,
exactly
sanctity of life, I suppose.
Mm. So hopefully they'll be empowered and emboldened to continue doing their work with adequate reaction from the global community.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a little bit about this with David last week, about the Tongan beauty queen speech that caused quite a bit of controversy in Tonga. Can you talk a little bit, can you tell us how that sort of progressed, what sort of happened now?
Yes, so the reaction and backlash to that was quite severe. I think David mentioned that.
Yes.
But the Tonga's tourist authorities have said that they will, because of that speech she gave and because she didn't follow the proper conduct of handing over her crown, they're going to wipe her from the records and say she never was Miss Halela, which is the title of the beauty pageant winner for the year. So Carlo Funganita, who is the woman who gave the speech, she's not going to be on the record as having won that award. But that's probably going to add to the backlash already growing, and I guess add to this issue about the response from establishment to powerful women who speak out, which is fantastic, but some people can't handle it. So it's just gonna spurn on the debate, I hope, and cast more light on a pretty egregious issue.
And is that something that, I mean, we talked a little bit about this with David last week, but is that her having her title stripped from her and, you know, obviously being shut down at the competition, do you think more people are sort of on the side of those trying to, you know, shut her down and shut down her voice, or are people in Tonga and other people in the Pacific, other people in New Zealand, more upset about that than anything else.
I think I don't know like much about what's happening in Tonga, but I think in New Zealand especially, because she's a University of Auckland student, and our society is changing quite rapidly. She has support. She has a lot of backing, and a lot of people are supportive and happy with what she said and what she did. Her actions are to be commended. In Tonga, where it's probably a little bit more conservative still, I would hazard a guess that it's not as universal, her support, but that society will undoubtedly be changing slowly as well. She'll certainly have her backers and her critics.
Yeah. Is there any way for her to appeal the decision that was made against her?
Perhaps. This only came out late last week, and I don't think there's been a response from her yet. But I don't know. I think she would have probably been prepared for some kind of backlash from that establishment. From what she said, it seems like it's a pretty messed up system. So, yeah. We'll wait and see.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to hear. I wonder whether we'll hear more about that next week. So moving on to Indonesia, a major Indonesian trade show took place in Auckland last week as part of efforts by Jakarta to win over Pacific allies. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So David spoke about this as well.
Yes.
This is basically Indonesia's major pitch to the Pacific Island countries to say, hey, look, we're all part of the same region and we're your friend and your family, and opening the door for bilateral trade and for political relationships. So this is basically their gesture to the region. I didn't go to the expo itself. I think in terms of in that context of trade, it was quite beneficial and quite progressive. However, it's always going to have this West Papua issue casting a shadow over it. Mm. So there was protest that happened outside the building. And I just learned that Marama Davidson came down, which is fantastic. And Catherine Delahunty, who's the former MP and now part of Auckland West Papua Action Group, they were there. So they were basically protesting that. How can Indonesia be part of the Pacific when it is impeding and oppressing Pacific peoples?
And how can it be sort of encouraging relationships and saying, yeah, we're a big family, let's all work together, if you're not really working together with everybody anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I interviewed a West Papuan activist a couple of weeks ago, and she said that Indonesia are basically trying to usurp the West Papuan identity, and say, well, we're Pacific. I mean, that's fair enough if you want to have bilateral trade, but it seems compromised.
Absolutely. So, and finally, I've got a little bit of news about Pacific Media Watch.
Yes. So one of my colleagues, Sri Krishnamurthy, he and Blessing Tom, another ex-colleague who now works for Fair Go, they produced a video looking at the history of Pacific Media Watch since its inception in the late 90s. So it's been going a long time, and it's an amazing video. Blessing is a producer with Fair Go, so he's an incredible video technician. So it's just a quality piece of work. And it's got interviews with all the past contributing editors, myself included, Alex Perrette from RNZ, who helped set up this show, I think, with your predecessors or with you guys.
A while predecessors, ago. Predecessors, like, I would say.
Yeah, 2013, I think. Yeah. So it's documenting what the Pacific Media Watch Project's role's been in the Pacific and how it has helped journalists go on to become quite big players in the New Zealand mainstream media.
That's awesome. And where can you find it?
That is online on our Asia Pacific Report website, but it will be officially launched in the next coming weeks, and there will be an announcement on that.
Oh, well, that I would definitely like to watch that, because has it been on the show since 2013? That is insane.
Yeah.
Long before we were here.
I think it was 2013. I think Alex Perrette was here quite a while ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So read all about Pacific Media Centre updates at asiapacificreport.nz and look out for that mini documentary coming out soon. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
That was The Southern Cross.